thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this podcast from Celtic Underground. You are possibly picking this up on thecelticunderground.substack.com. If you are a paid subscriber, you can link your account to wherever you pick up your podcasts, whether that be Spotify, Apple, Amazon, wherever, and you can pick up the subscription feed where you get your normal feed. Just go on to Substack on the website and follow the instructions. Meantime, this is Andrew H. Smith in conversation.
Hi all, and it isn't often we have the former Scottish First Minister on with us in an edition of the Celtic Underground in Conversation podcast. In fact, we never have. But by that same token, I don't think there's ever been a Scottish First Minister who's been a Celtic supporter. Would that be right, Hamza? What would you think? Are you the one and only?
I think so. Look, another historic first. Maybe the most important historic first is that I think I am the very first First Minister to be a Celtic supporter, and the very first to be, definitely the very first I can say, to be on the Celtic Underground podcast. A real pleasure, Andrew. Delighted to be able to chat to you today.
No, thanks so much. Thanks so much for making the time for us, and you've made more time for us than we expected, but we don't need to tell the, don't need to tell our listeners that one. But I mean, I was looking back, like, so you've got, you started off with Donald Dewar, he never claimed anything other than the Scottish national team. Jim Wallace, God rest him, we lost him this week.
Sadly, sad news.
Jim was the same. And then with Henry McLeish, now I know Henry, he's Fife man, so he was for his sins. And then with Jack McConnell, who claimed Motherwell and Leeds. There was one for you, like, there was two for you. A Leeds United fan. Alex Salmon, the late Alex Salmon, we know was a jambo.
Yeah, big time.
Any moans about that? Nicola Sturgeon seemed to have a more dismissive attitude towards football than would ever have a football team.
I would say definitely not a football fan, for sure. No.
There's an understatement of the century.
Indeed.
And then John Swinney, St Johnstone fan.
Yes, I think. I think his son is probably a more passionate fan and has probably dragged John to the right place. John is, and I think probably attends fewer matches than he'd like as First Minister. But he's a St Johnstone fan. So yeah, that's it. I'm very proud to be, I think, the first ever Celtic fan to have occupied Bute House, and maybe won't be the last. Hopefully not the last.
Well, as I say, it shows a real courage from you. I mean, you've got enough targets in your back. As you know, the son of Pakistani immigrants, a person of colour. Then you add to that, and this kind of noxious, toxic mix that we often have within Scottish cultural life, you add Celtic.
You're
a masochist.
I mean, the answer to that is absolutely. But do you know what? It's a funny thing. When I got elected first in 2011, and I was just new, kind of in the door. I wasn't even in the door. That's right. I remember it was before the election. It was the election campaign. And I'll not name the colleague because it'd probably be unfair to do so. But a colleague of mine in the SNP kind of pulled me aside and he said, look, we're only a few weeks from the election. Maybe you should go through your social media and take down all the Celtic stuff. And, if anybody asks you, why don't you just say you're Partick Thistle? I said to him, well, one, I'm not Partick Thistle, right? I'm like mad Celtic, have been my whole life, and we can talk about that, no doubt. But also, I'm not going to go through my social media and start deleting stuff. Because one, that's disingenuous. But secondly, like, somebody's going to have a picture of me in a Celtic shop or standing outside Celtic Park or in Celtic Park. No, I'm not deleting it. And I never did. So some people have known me. But honestly, it was the advice that was given. It was just see in a Partick Thistle fan. You'll get less dogs abuse.
It's about the same. I mean, I was 25 years with a Scotsman, and people expect you to not have an allegiance. And it's not just Celtic. It's the same from the Rangers side. It's as if in a country where 67% of the people that go to football games are Celtic Rangers supporters.
Yeah.
None of the people who write about it are supposed to be Celtic Rangers supporters. Yeah. It's utterly ludicrous. Totally. But it was always okay for me because I'd been the Celtic View editor, so I didn't hide.
No. But look, go back to your point about targets in the back. And look, no small violins. I chose to be in politics, choose to be in politics. It's public profile. It's high profile. You know, there's been some, I'm sure, controversial things that I've done. So I think abuse obviously crosses a line, and you get racism, you get anti-Islamic, Islamophobia, you get all sorts of abuse. But also, the abuse I get just for being a Celtic fan is astonishing. I mean, genuinely astonishes me. I mean, I must be the only Muslim politician probably in the world that's had somebody convicted in a court for anti-Catholic and anti-Irish racism. I mean, somebody called me, a Fenian bastard, and I wasn't going to take it. I was like, well, that's not acceptable. Just because I'm not, Irish, I'm not accepting that kind of level of anti-Irish racism, reported it to the police, and the guy pled guilty, and got charged and convicted. So I must be, that is a level of kind of ridiculous abuse, that they can target somebody like me by calling, directing anti-Irish racism my way, even though, as much as I love Ireland, and I'm there next week actually in Dublin, but as much as I love Ireland, I'm Scottish and Muslim. So it's just, it is astonishing and ridiculous.
It was the unthinking nature of any kind of abuse, doesn't it? Like that when that cross the line abuse, whether it's a protected characteristics, the unthinking nature of people who abuse you. The basis of protected characteristics.
Yeah. And also, I don't understand it. And you'll be the same. Like, you'll have people in your circle, close circle, extended circle, that are support different football teams. I've got a cousin who's a Rangers fan. I've got one of my very close friends, Rangers fan, grew up with lots of them, and love the banter, the WhatsApp messages, the memes, the GIFs, all that stuff that go around when either we're getting beat or they're getting beat, all of that, and trust me, the banter years, 2012 onwards,
joyous.
Yeah, exactly. you can imagine, right? And that, I enjoy all that. Great fun. But it's just those that, see it as you say, a kind of green light, forgive the pun, but a green light to just give you the most horrific abuse, death threats. I'm not kidding. I mean, actual death threats. From people from the club that you support and that you talk openly about your support for, it's just, for me, I don't understand the mentality, if I'm honest, and can I help mend them?
Oh yeah, I mean, maybe I've got this wrong then, because I was at a tax justice event a couple of months ago, and I met the esteemed Bernard Ponsonby.
Uh-huh.
Who claimed to me that he took you to your first Celtic game, because for you, and again, maybe this is Mr. White Man or whatever, but you as a Hutchie boy, private school, here's my inverted snobbery coming in here, but you as a Hutchie boy of Pakistani immigrant parents,
yeah,
I wouldn't imagine that developing allegiance to Celtic was a kind of process of osmosis as it is for a lot of us from Irish Catholic backgrounds. Yeah. So was it Bernard that took you to your first game?
Bernard, not for the first time, is talking utter pish. I can say that. No, look, I like Bernard. He didn't take me to my first Celtic game. He took me to my first Celtic game in hospitality, which was very kind of him. It was very, very kind for you. A mutual acquaintance. So, and I saw a different side of Bernard, actually. I'd only ever seen Bernard, the STV interviewer, who's a phenomenally good interviewer and broadcaster. And he just, the rage... every missed pass from him was something I'd never experienced. So that was my first time in hospitality. My allegiance to Celtic actually came through my late uncle. My uncle sadly passed away almost 10 years ago, now quite young. He died in his early 50s through pancreatic cancer. But my uncle, he was the youngest of my mum's siblings. So, with a younger sibling, they're almost, because there's not as much of an age gap, they're kind of like big brothers more than they are.
Yeah.
More than they are, kind of uncle figures. But he was like a second father to me, my uncle. Celtic daft, Celtic mad. Like a lot of Pakistani immigrants became Celtic fans, and the children of Pakistani immigrants. And there's lots of different theories why. Some of the most simple explanation is the flag of Pakistan was green and white, and there was a football club that was green and white, and they went, we'll take that one. Thanks very much. And a lot of it was because many of them did go to Catholic schools and so on and so forth. Whatever the reason, Munko was Celtic daft, you know, and you know, loved the game anyway, and, you know, followed Scotland everywhere, played as much football as he possibly could. You know, even into his later life, you know, playing, you know, I remember him trying to get to a game of football to play a game of fives, but a week after going through his first bit of chemo, you know, he was just football daft. So he you know, because he was such a big influence in my life, because of him, became a Celtic fan. And I was desperate to go to Parkhead. My uncle would just regale me of all these stories about Parkhead. So I was probably, you know, 6, 7 years old when I became a Celtic fan. My mum just wouldn't let me go to Parkhead. She just was like, no. You know, my uncle was saying, like, it's safe, I go all the time, it's great fun, you'll have a great time. Mum was like, no. But she did say to me, and this comes in the Hutchie point, if you pass your entrance exams and get into Hutchie, you can go. So if ever there was an incentive to go to Hutchie, which I wasn't really keen on because all my friends were going to the local school, Eastwood. So anyway, passed the entrance exam at Hutchie, and that very summer went to my first Celtic game. It was 1997, that would have been. So it was Reggie Blinker's debut, I think home debut. I'm afraid it was a loss to Dunfermline, so I wasn't sure I was ever going to be allowed back in by my uncle to go to Parkhead. But I mean, instantly fell in love, you know, the atmosphere, the energy. I saw also a different side of my uncle, which was quite fun as well. And even though it wasn't the result that we wanted, I just fell a bit. So yeah, that was my first time going to Parkhead. But Bernard is way off, but he's definitely the first time I think I ever went to hospitality was with Bernard.
Yeah, I've only been to hospitality once. God, you're making me feel old here, Hamza, because I was the editor of the Celtic U in 97.
Oh, really?
And I remember thinking, what the feck are we going to do this season? Because this season's going to be disastrous, because they'd lost to Hibs the week before the game you're talking about. And what a bitter experience. My God, what a first experience for you. Because the cacophony that was coming down for the stands that day, because they thought the league was gone. They thought that was Rangers 10 in a row.
That was just so tough, and you know, at that time I grew up, so I'm 40 years old, and we actually lived around the corner from Tommy Burns. We grew up in Newton Mearns, so I'm pretty sure he was around the corner, and really felt for him. I mean, just a wonderful man for lots of different reasons, and incredible stories that were told during his life and shortly after he passed away. But you just felt for the guy, like you just could not get a break, and you know, go through seasons where you're not even losing games, and you're still, you know, Rangers coming up on top. And yeah, I mean, it comes to memorable matches. I mean, I was in floods of happy tears, I have to say, in that season where we stopped 10 in a row for Rangers.
It all turned around after that.
And that game probably was one of the most, that game in the January. Just New Year 98, where we beat Rangers. Oh, yeah. Was it 2-0, 2-1? 2-0. That game probably, one of the most pivotal games in Celtic's history, I would have thought.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I actually remember watching with my Rangers supporting cousin, of all people, and thinking, you know, we've had a lot of false starts, but this could be it. But yeah, to hold your nerve then from January right the way through to the end of the season to stop that. And I remember again being in floods of tears when we stopped that at 10 in a row.
Yeah, I just remember hugging my family. That was the only time I was in hospitality that day, bizarrely. I'd just left Celtic and gone to the Evening Times, and so you didn't need to write at that time because you're writing for a Monday morning edition, so you don't need to write. So I said, is it okay if I go to the hospitality? I'll still be at the game and I'll run into the press room after it and all that, and they said aye, and then, but I saw my family sitting there, season tickets, because they've got season tickets just beside it, and you just went up, nobody said anything, as you say, it was just, you hugged each other and you just wept. Uncontrollably. I'd downed a bottle of champagne, mind you, in the hospitality.
I remember it was 98, so you know, I'm still I'm just a teenager at that point, And I mentioned I watched it at my cousin's house, who's a Rangers fan. Anyway, the game goes on, and you know, in tears. And me and my other, his younger brother, were Celtic fans. My older cousin, he's a Rangers fan. And me and my younger cousin are hugging each other, and we're jumping up and down. And my uncle, whose house we were at, he was saying, right, boys, go get chippy down the road. And I remember going down, and you know, Celtic, everybody with a Celtic top was out. Cars were honking the horn, Celtic flags out the windows. And I got this random guy in the chippy queue, and he's on a Celtic top, and he just came and gave me a big kiss, you know, the cheek. And I was like, oh, it's going to be one of those days. So, no, I mean, that can be, I mean, there's lots of memorable moments, but that's got to be up there.
And because at that point, I was only the Evening Times about 6 months, and then I moved to the Scotland and Sundays, it was then, before I was working for the Scotsman. So I started going, it was like every second week it was Ibrox, then Celtic Park. And what you're saying, I'm quite interested in that, because my impression then was that the Asian community, and I shouldn't treat them as an amorphous mass, as if he's you know, like you're all the same if you're not a white face, but I saw far more kind of Asian supporters at Ibrox than I did at Celtic Park at that time. And
really?
I never quite, and I always thought maybe it was the south side, it's maybe more like the, mm-hmm. that's maybe where you're greater concentration of the Asian population is Glasgow South Side. And
It could have been. It's hard to say, because I mean, so a lot of the first wave of immigrants went to Bellahouston Academy, for example, so you're not kind of a million miles away from there. But I mean, growing up, to be honest, mainly because most of my friend circle was Celtic supporters, I didn't come across many Asians who were Rangers fans. Obviously, there is and continues to be. But mainly in my circle, particularly around kind of Scottish Pakistanis, most of them were Celtic supporters. But and this may be something, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking too much about it and delving too much into it, but maybe there was an association with the fact that, you know, one was a club founded by immigrants and the others, you know, and this was the new wave of immigrants. And there was a very close connection between the Irish and Pakistanis. You know, my father... my grandfather, I should say, when he first came here, moved into Govan Hill for a very short period of time, but first moved into Govan Hill, and you know, almost all of his neighbours were Irish, and he would say that, and he would talk about them very, very often, have a really strong relationship. Look, for me, actually, my association with the Irish, Scottish-Irish community came at a really difficult period of my life. You know, I was 16 years old when 9/11 happened, and... I don't need to tell you, you know, obviously thousands of miles away from what happened, and the first people that are impacted are those, you know, obviously who lost their lives, their families. But it's incredible, the ripples of 9/11 were felt everywhere. And you know, as a 16-year-old Muslim boy, you know, with a name like I had, growing up in the West, suddenly, as somebody who'd only ever thought of themselves as Scottish, suddenly felt like the kind of country was turning against you, because you'd get people asking you questions about, you know, Al-Qaeda, and, you know, how can Muslims do all this? And expecting you to answer these questions, even though you had nothing to do with it. And if Muslims then felt under the cosh, you know, my sister who wore the headscarf got attacked. You know, people were saying that other Muslims used to shave off your beard, to the men, to the women, take off your headscarves. You know, it was a really, really felt under suspicion as an entire community. You hear the whispers at the supermarkets, the play dates stopped for Muslim kids and with their non-Muslim friends. You know, the experience was really tough at that time. And I remember it was when going to Celtic Park that so many of my Irish, you know, I say friends, people we came across during that time would say, look, we know, we've been there. We know what it felt like, and it will pass. And I took a great amount of solidarity from that, friendship from that, and solace from that, that there was a community that was standing right by our side and say, look, we're with you in this. We've been there. And trust me, you'll get through it at the other end.
Thanks for downloading and listening to this podcast. However, if you are a paid subscriber, keep listening. There's more of the podcast left.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision. and also subscribe to the CelticUnderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address, and then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.